Welcome back to Film Club, everyone. My name is Jeff Yance. I am the program director at the Loft Cinema, and we also have with us today Heather Lares, occasional filmmaker.
Hello.
And multimedia artist Rusty Belay Stevenson.
Why, hello there.
Hello, guys. Okay, so today we're talking about musicians who act. This year, unfortunately, saw the passing of two of the greatest musicians of all time, David Bowie and Prince.
Yeah.
Yes.
Both of whom acted to various levels of success. And Bowie, of course, had a long career in acting starting in the 70s with The Man Who Fell to Earth, Labyrinth, The Hunger, etc. I was a huge Bowie fan, and I think he was a great actor. So what do you two think about Bowie as a film presence?
I like what I've seen of... I haven't seen a ton of Bowie in film. Certainly, though, Labyrinth, he's the best part of Labyrinth.
Yep.
I loved his little performance in Twin Peaks Firewalk with Me, yes, where he's kind of ghostly, and you don't quite know what to make of his appearance in that. And it's totally David Bowie. You don't always know what to make of David Bowie. You kind of have to take it in and think about it a little bit and turn it over in your head some.
Right.
And so I think he's brilliant that way.
Yeah, and that's what his persona was chameleon-like. So that's kind of perfect for an actor to disappear into a role. And he was obviously comfortable performing the role of Ziggy Stardust from early on in his career. Now, Heather, you had mentioned The Man Who Fell to Earth as being a favorite of yours.
Yeah, it's by far one of the weirdest movies I've ever seen.
Yes.
But one of my favorites because it was really the first time that I had seen the idea of androgyny portrayed on film and in a way that, I mean, in the movie, he's an alien, but you kind of always have this fogginess with that idea. Is he really an alien? Is he a person?
Right.
Is he human? And it was just such a refreshing role, and he fit it so well because he's been doing that for years on stage when he was singing, playing this androgynous character. And it, I don't know, it sort of gave me some level of acceptance, like an identity that was important for me to see on screen.
Yeah. And I think I'm also a fan of The Hunger, the movie he made in the 83, the Tony Scott film where he plays a vampire, Catherine Deneuve's boyfriend, and he's a rapidly aging vampire, and it's great. And I think one key to his success as an actor is that he always picked roles that fit his very kind of otherworldly persona that he already had as a musician. He wasn't trying to play the romantic comedy leading man. That was not David Bowie.
No. And in a way, it kind of fit his looks. Like, he has this look to him that's almost otherworldly, you know, and all of the roles he plays fit into those perfectly.
Yeah. Right. Of course he could be Andy Warhol in Basquiat.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't look at David Bowie and think Andy Warhol, but of course he could do it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Of course he could pull that off.
Yeah. So I think he was an example of a musician who really made the transition into acting very easily and continued performing while he was acting as well, because it was all part of a performance for him.
Right.
But Prince, now, I think we've talked about before, Purple Rain is one of my favorite movies. Prince is amazing in that film playing the kid, i.e. Prince playing himself. So he totally knocks it out of the park. You guys fans of The Rain?
I love Purple Rain.
Oh,
yes.
Sure.
Yes.
It's one of the... I forgot about the scene with the puppet.
Or the puppet, the weird
when
puppet.
When he's in the mirror and they're all talking in the band room. And honestly, that's some of the finest acting, you know, he's done. It was subtle.
With the puppet, yeah, exactly.
But it was like powerful all at the same time.
Yeah. And when he performs Purple Rain in Purple Rain, to me, that's one of the best acting performances I've seen by a musician who's acting through music. It's really emotional and wrenching and beautiful. And
absolutely.
Just great. Prince did make other films, of course, after that, Under the Cherry Moon, Graffiti Bridge. Not quite as well received. He wasn't really playing himself, and I think that kind of got him into trouble.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I know he was a high school athlete, even though he was diminutive, even though he's a small little guy. He still was like on the football team and on the basketball team and stuff. Was he in acting in high school, do you know?
No, that was not part of his history at all.
Oh.
So I think he learned to perform on stage as a musician, and he had that very distinctive kind of sexual, funky persona that I think worked very well in Purple Rain, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe not quite as well in his other films, because that requires a different kind of charisma.
That's right.
Acting.
That's right. And that's ultimately, I think, what we end up talking about here is just the fact that musicians are performers in the same way, and actors are performers, but it's different. It's very different. And without a bit of a background, I think, as soon as we started recording, as soon as humanity started recording anything onto film, I think they wanted to record music and record these really charismatic people who played music, in fact, and who spent their time thinking about art and thinking about music. I think we wanted to put that on film, but it hasn't always translated.
Right. So I think that's an interesting point of discussion, is what is it that makes for a good musician in terms of charisma versus what makes a good actor in terms of charisma, because it doesn't always translate. And you would think if you're comfortable performing in front of thousands of people, you can act, but that's a different kind of acting.
Yes,
it is.
Definitely.
At the end of our last episode of Film Club, I teased the idea that you don't want to fall into the Elvis trap. And what I meant by that was Elvis, obviously one of the most charismatic humans to ever roam the earth.
Yeah.
Amazing, you know,
obviously.
Performer, obviously, made over 30 films in the 50s and 60s. Early on, pretty great films, Jailhouse Rock, Love Me Tender. And then in the 60s, when he just started working because his manager was just making him do every film that came his way, we started getting Harum Scarum, Clam Bake, Kissin' Cousins, mm-hmm. which I love. And I think I've probably seen all of them. I love them, but I wouldn't call them great cinema. And right. He wasn't really given the chance to act.
Yeah, he was really the same person throughout all of those for the most part.
Right, exactly. Even when he was playing a Native American or he was playing a Middle Eastern person.
Soldier.
It got kind of ridiculous. Yeah. Like
scientist.
Exactly.
I didn't see that one.
Clam Bake.
Oh, okay.
Clam Bake playing a scientist.
Clam Bake.
Exactly. And then wrapping it up at the end of the 60s, his career with Change of Habit with Mary Tyler Moore, where he falls in love with her and she's a nun.
Oh, habit.
And
that's the name.
Yeah. And he's a social worker who goes to work in a poor neighborhood and meets this nun. And yeah, so the kind of a squandered film career, because he could have had so much because he had so much charisma, but I don't think he was given the chance. So I think that's kind of a warning for other musicians to be a little careful about your choices, not playing yourself on film over and over.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure.
Yeah, it doesn't turn you into an actor necessarily. So I'm kind of curious what you two think about musicians who were maybe too big to become actors, like a Michael Jackson. We talked a little bit about Madonna earlier.
I think that's an excellent example is Madonna.
Yes.
She was such an enormous star, and she was so charismatic, or is even still.
It is, yes.
But it never has quite translated for her into film success. She's been in things that are watchable.
Sure.
I even think like Truth or Dare is a performance, and I think that's watchable. It's not great by any means, but it's not as bad as it was made out to be when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Tracy's kind of in the same boat.
Desperately Seeking Susan, she's great.
She's great
in
that.
She's playing kind of herself.
Yeah.
Yes. But when she's acting, I would say Evita was a little rough for me. Body of Evidence, Swept Away.
Yeah.
Body of Evidence isn't very watchable.
No.
People like give Evita accolades because of the singing, and I give her definite respect for that part.
Right.
But there was not that second level of the movie musical where we're singing and then we're having a dramatic moment and we can handle both of those things at the same
time. That's right. Yes.
She wasn't able to do that.
And she's not someone who can disappear. And I think to be a good actor, you have to be able to disappear.
Boy, that's the truth.
And not just stare at them at the screen and say, oh, I still see Madonna. I still am seeing Madonna, you know, instead of I'm seeing that character, you
right.
know, that she definitely has never been able to break that.
Yeah. And I think that was maybe the frustration for Michael Jackson, because they knew for years he wanted to play Peter Pan in a Steven Spielberg film, and that didn't work out. And he did a couple of films. He did The Wiz. He played the Scarecrow in The Wiz.
The Disney 3D picture, Captain EO.
Captain EO. But there was really no way that Michael Jackson could really disappear into a character because he was so famous.
Well, and I think at some point that has to be scary for them, because that's how they've been making their money, and their success comes from the music. And someone to be really successful as an actor, you then have to drop that completely and really be someone else, be that character. And my guess is that people like Bowie can handle that because he's confident enough in his own skin to do that.
Right.
And I don't think Madonna is, or maybe even talent, of course. But, you know, Prince, I think, got there to a certain degree, but couldn't go much farther. And Michael Jackson, I don't think ever. He was so ingrained in that Michael Jackson that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, you could see him acting in a music video, and that worked because he's telling the story of the song. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it doesn't really work. He's still, even in the Thriller video, don't you see Michael Jackson? You don't really see a character per se.
No.
You see Michael Jackson.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And I think the biggest music stars, they have to craft a very easily recognizable persona to sell records.
Yes.
So that, I think, can kind of overwhelm the person and you become that character you're playing, which makes it very difficult to be an actor. But many musicians have beat the curse, I think, and become very good actors. So, Heather, we were talking earlier about Cher.
Who is my favorite musician to acting kind of streak in her life. She's done such a tremendous job with that. And she started early. You guys talked about... We were talking about the variety show she had with... Did she have it with...
Sunny.
It was Sunny? Okay. Yeah. And she did comedy early on. And and then, you know, she started doing the bit parts. And then I think the first memory I have of Cher on screen was Silkwood. And she's a supporting character, but it was the first time in my brain that I recognized that these were... Meryl Streep's character and her character were really a couple... a lesbian couple, and then I found out the true story later on that they were a couple. But it was my first acknowledgement as a kid, seeing that and how it was portrayed and how awesome it was, because Silkwood gave me that sense of social justice and wanting to help people and that kind of idea. And she was so good, and she was so that character. I wasn't sitting there thinking, I'm seeing Cher.
Right.
You see her, you see the lady working at the factory,
totally deglamorized.
Yeah, her hair was just, you know, like not done, no makeup on. And, you know, she is helping this woman, in quotes, partner, roommate,
right.
Raise her kids and, you know, that kind of thing. And then she went on to play Mask. You know, here she's playing the mom of this boy who has this disfigurement and, you know, she has to be there for him. And again, you know, jeans and t-shirt kind of mom.
Yeah, she really... Falls into that role perfectly.
Yeah, which is surprising for Cher because Cher kind of has a larger-than-life persona.
Glamorous.
Absolutely,
You know, and the fact that she was able to disappear into all those different characters, come back to the Five and Dime Jimmy Dean, I think was an amazing performance by Cher as well. Also very deglamorized. And then she won the Oscar for Moonstruck later in the 80s, playing a relatively normal, relatable character.
Yes, a relatable character, and also that idea that why isn't she married yet? You know, that Italian family, why isn't she married yet? And, you know, here she falls in love with Nicolas Cage's character, who is so odd and offbeat and not what she's supposed to be falling in love with.
Right.
But she plays it so well. I mean, she's in the movie, she's playing a slightly, I think the intention was to be middle-aged woman. And I mean, again, we talk about, I don't see her as Cher. I just see her as this woman. Who is, you know, snap out of it. You know,
snap
she's very, you know, strong,
yeah.
but also fighting her family values of why am I not married yet? And that kind of mainstream idea.
Yeah. And in terms of maintaining a music career while you're acting, I think Cher was very interesting because the year she won the Oscar for Moonstruck was when she did the song If I Could Turn Back Time, with the music video that I think we all remember where she is wearing a thong on a Navy battleship with hundreds of sailors yelling at her while she's straddling a giant gun.
And the tattoo on her butt.
On her butt. It was like no agent would ever suggest to you, yes, after you've won the Oscar, you should do something like that, Cher. So I felt like she was sort of rebelling against the respectability of being an Oscar-winning actress.
Absolutely, she was. Her appearances on David Letterman at that time, too, right? She came out and purposefully tried to embarrass him with her outfits.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so that's really cool that she could do that, that she could be so much bigger than life. I mean, Cher in the 80s and 90s was bigger than life, but still able to fall into the mom in Mask role as just it's really a testament to who she is as an actor, as a performer.
Right.
She really pulls it off with aplomb.
And I do think like a lot of women that age really looked up to her and saw that, you know, she's doing amazing things. She's was yeah. a woman in her 40s, I think, at that time. During If You Could Turn Back Time. Mm-hmm. And so she's still going at it, going for it, looking beautiful and going to be who she's going to be. And that was amazing at that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And go Cher.
Yeah. Her later movies, I haven't watched many of them, but I still think she's one of the best actresses. Mermaids is one of my favorite all-time movie about, you know, the mom that's not quite a mom. She's not a conventional mom. I mean, it's more of a Winona Ryder vehicle, but she still plays like the eccentric mom in that role, which I loved. It's such a great movie.
Yeah, and she had the Shoop Shoop song from Mermaid, so she was still making music in her films, and she still disappeared into a character, which was kind of amazing. So now, Rusty, who do you have as an example of someone that you think really made the transition?
Well, one in particular that was really interesting to me is Tom Waits.
Yes.
Tom Waits, before 1980, he's releasing music that is kind of on the verge of country. It's Tin Pan Alley. He's got this persona that he's worked on that's kind of like this street person almost. But it's very different than what would happen from 1983 on. In 1980, he's contacted by Francis Ford Coppola to work on a soundtrack, One from the Heart. And when he does that, he meets Coppola's script analyst, and her name's Kathleen Brennan. They would go on to marry in August of 1980, and she introduces him to the music of Captain Beefheart, which sends him off. In 1983, he releases his next album. It's Swordfish Trombone, which, by and large, nobody's heard anything quite like this ever before. He's all at once making all this noise that's somehow melodic, and Kathleen starts writing a lot of his better songs. I mean, some of the songs that I really love. And it's just interesting to me. And he would go on to act in Francis Ford Coppola in 1983. He's in both Rumblefish and has a small part in The Outsiders as well.
Right.
And he's just a social outcast. That's what Tom Waits does really well. But it starts really creating his persona of this crazy street person who makes music with everything possible, with spoons and things that you find in your kitchen and things you would find in your garden. He's now making music with that stuff, and he's turning it into something much bigger. And he turns it into, I mean, he now becomes an actor at that point. He meets Jim Jarmusch. He's in Down by Law. He stars in that.
Yep.
And he and Jarmusch and is it John Lurie form a club, Sons of Lee Marvin.
Lee Marvin, yes.
Which is kind of interesting.
People who look like Lee Marvin.
Yeah, people who look like Lee Marvin.
And they all do.
Neil Young's in the club and quite a few other people.
Yeah.
But Tom Waits turns it into a real a career now. Down by Law is his real starring role. After that, he's in like Bram Stoker's Dracula, where he's Dracula's assistant. You know, these edge of society characters who are...
Yeah.
That his voice suits, that his persona suits. He's not playing Tom Waits per se. He's playing these variations on Tom Waits' character. He's playing these Tom Waits-esque characters, but not Tom Waits himself. In Mystery Men, really an underrated film, another movie that shouldn't have gotten panned the way it did.
Right.
But it works better on a small screen, I think, maybe than a big screen. But Tom Waits is in that. And he's in so many neat things that I think he's really turned it into. And when you see, he's turned it into something bigger, where even his concert film, Big Time, is more than a concert film. It's performance art, it's acting, it's music, it's singing. He's really upped the ante on what somebody can even do with a film and music career. So I see him as incredibly successful.
Yeah. And yeah, so film actually influenced his music trajectory, which is interesting. Did you ever see the film Cold Feet?
I haven't.
It's great. It's a starring role. It's one of his few starring roles. Early 90s, David Carradine is in it. No, Keith Carradine, I'm sorry. Written by Thomas McGuane, the famous writer. And he's playing sort of a weird cowboy character, which is very Tom Waits. Because that voice is so distinctive, his speaking voice. He's not going to get cast in a lot of conventional roles for sure.
That's true.
No, not at all. I don't think he would even want that, right?
Yeah.
Because he really crafts his persona. I'm convinced that, I mean, he's not, he even says it a lot of times, you know, like, oh, it's something I've cultivated. And so I think he takes these roles knowing that it's going to continue to cultivate what his personality is and how people see him.
Right.
It's really different. And I think Madonna wanted to do that. But it, her role in Evita, for instance, I think she really wanted to be more beloved. And I think that that's why she takes that role and why she does it. She's wanting to be bigger than just a musician.
But you felt that she wanted it too badly.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the, kind of the issue. Like Tom Waits seems like he can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Which is part of his persona, you know.
It is. Yeah. It is. That street person, devil may care.
Yeah. And I think had Alice in Wonderland, the Tim Burton film, been a cooler film, they would have cast Tom Waits as the Mad Hatter, which I think is a role waiting for him to be played.
Amazing.
Would have been amazing, but that wasn't the right film. But if they did a different version of Alice, I think he would be great because he did the opera, the Alice opera. So I know he's familiar with that world for sure.
Well, yeah. And theatrics seems to be part of his forte.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I think, yeah, Tom Waits is a great example of that. I was going to throw out kind of a more, maybe a less expected one was Mark Wahlberg.
Yes.
Mark Wahlberg. Marky Mark. And I remember in the late 90s, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, he was feeling Good Vibrations. He was dropping his pants in public.
He was the model for Calvin Klein
underwear model. And then he appeared in this, what I think is this really great 1996 film called Fear with Reese Witherspoon, which is
so bad. Yes.
Oh, yes. It's like a reverse Fatal Attraction where he is stalking Reese Witherspoon. She's a high schooler. He's this crazy suitor.
Oh, wow.
I was traumatized.
It's great. And then the year after, he appears in Boogie Nights, where we see a lot of Mark Wahlberg in every respect.
Yes.
But what we saw was that he's actually a really good actor to the point now. Two Oscar nominations. I feel like you don't even remember. You would say to people, oh, you know, he used to be a rapper. I don't think people would even remember that.
Right.
No,
until
no.
you sang Good
Unless
Vibrations
you,
to
yeah,
them.
You like grew up with that or, yeah.
Yeah.
Paul Thomas Anderson is somebody as a director, I think, and like Robert Altman with Cher before, I think Paul Thomas Anderson is somebody who can bring out and use a musician appropriately and knows how to maybe do that better than your average director.
Right.
Because he's used to these ensemble casts.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like Robert Altman.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And the Marky Mark persona was sort of like a tough guy. And it seemed like he was very humorless. So I was very surprised that Mark Wahlberg actually seems to be a funny person. He's in the Ted films with the teddy bear.
I mean, he's a straight guy for the most part in that comedy, but he pulls it off well. I mean, you know, it's, I would, you know, Boogie Nights is one of my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movies.
Me too.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
It's such, that's some of the best acting that Mark Wahlberg has ever done.
Right.
And when you don't see him, like, for example, in his supporting role in The Departed, he plays one of the, I can't remember his name, but that role is one of the ones where you're like, how is that Mark Wahlberg? How is that, you know?
Exactly.
It's one of those definite moments where you don't know that he used to be a musician. He used to be this kid who rapped, and here he is being this very tough law guy. And Mark Wahlberg is underrated to a certain degree because he does kind of do these a lot of mainstream movies that are, you know, don't do that well.
But Date Night.
Yeah.
Right.
But then he does like these really good Departed.
The Fighter.
Boogie Nights.
He was great in
that. The Fighter
was great.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And he's someone who did not use his music persona and his acting persona, which I think is interesting. He totally cut himself off from it. But obviously he had confidence, like a musician's confidence to take on a role like Boogie Nights as one of your first films takes a lot of chutzpah, I would say.
Yes, some definite chutzpah.
I was going to use another word, but I don't want to, given that it's Boogie Nights.
Right.
So there are a number of actors who have succeeded, and then there are other actors that you just kind of wonder why it hasn't worked. And I'm thinking like of a current performer, Beyoncé, who we know is like gigantic, one of the most charismatic people around. Mm-hmm. Her film career has not, like she's attempted film roles. It hasn't quite taken off in Dreamgirls. You know, she kind of disappeared because Jennifer Hudson sort of took that film over and won the Oscar for it. I don't know if you ever saw the film Obsession with Beyoncé.
I haven't.
It's kind of an exploitation film where she's, you know, her boyfriend is being stalked by another woman, so she's battling this woman.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like yet, at least yet, her charisma has translated into films. But she made that Lemonade music video project, which is amazing.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's really, that's her telling her own story.
So yeah.
I'm curious if she's going to be able to transition into being able to act someone else's story and why that hasn't happened yet.
Hmm.
Because she's obviously like so talented and kind of incredible.
I'm not sure why that is either. I think, she definitely was eclipsed by Jennifer Hudson in Dreamgirls.
Mm-hmm.
She was good, but nothing special for the most part.
Exactly.
I mean, her voice is one of outstanding.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know if she could. And when you see her shows, the footage from her tour, she puts on a show there. She's putting on a 2-hour show with costumes and dancing and singing. And so I don't know if she's so ingrained in that she would be able to kind of be someone else.
Exactly.
She might fall into the Madonna kind of where she's just a little too big as a musician that she might not be able to lose herself.
Yeah. Exactly. Especially at this moment when she's kind of at her peak.
I agree.
Like maybe in years to come when she's not sort of at the center of everyone's attention.
That's true.
She can do that. Yeah. I think of Dolly Parton sort of as another version of that because she was such a larger than life character and she had that great run of 9 to 5 and Best Little Whorehouse in Texas in the '80s. But then I think it became difficult for her to play anything other than a Dolly Parton character because it's almost like a cartoon in a way.
Yeah.
Well, if you notice, like musicians craft not just their music and their voice, but they craft their whole look, their whole persona.
Yes.
So for them to be willing to say, I'm going to drop that and not let that interfere with this acting, it's kind of hard. And I don't think a lot of them can do that.
Yeah. It requires a vulnerability that maybe you can't have as a musician because you have to be very confident and sort of outgoing and.
That's an interesting point. In prepping for this podcast, for this episode, I watched some Dwight Yoakam. He appears in the Nick Cage movie, Red Rock West. And so I started looking at Dwight Yoakam, and he's got an interesting career because he was really into acting, but then he started acting and he realized, oh, I'm not in charge at all as an actor.
Right.
And he wanted to have more control over what he was doing. And so he had been in a musical that was like a 1950s thing. And so that kind of started making him think that music was the way to go. And you can see that rock and roll era from the 50s infusing his country vibe all over the place. And that was early in his career. And he ended up, he says, you know, in interviews I've seen, like with Charlie Rose, he said, you know, I figured I'll be a musician and then maybe that will lead me to a chance to act. And that's exactly what it did. And though most of his stuff is not considered, most of the films he's been in haven't been considered great, he was really good in Sling Blade, especially for the time.
Definitely.
You watch that performance and he's really frightening the first time you see that movie, and he's a scary person, and he really plays it well. It almost comes off as funny if you watch it now and you've seen it a bunch of times. I find myself laughing when he's yelling at his band.
Well, yes.
But he's an interesting person and if you watch his early performances too, I mean, he takes so much from that early 1950s, 1960s, the theatrics of it, being on stage. His first Johnny Carson performance is so interesting because he really kind of takes on Elvis and starts dancing a little bit like Elvis through it as he's singing Little Sister. It's really something. You could look it up on YouTube. It's way worth watching.
Yeah. He's had a very interesting film career for sure. I do want to thank everyone for joining us at Film Club today. Sort of in celebration of the impending 4th of July holiday, America's birthday, we're going to be talking about politically incorrect cinema and freedom of speech.
That's right.
Yes. Leading us to Film Club rule number 87. Say whatever the hell you want. That's a good motto for a filmmaker, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, very good.
Yes. So we're going to be talking about that. And then we're going to be talking a lot about Team America World Police, of course.
Absolutely. Yes. I think that's what started it.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes.
Fun.
That's my favorite 4th of July film by far. So thanks, Heather. Thanks, Rusty.
Thanks, Jeff.
I look forward to next time.
Yes. And join us next time on Film Club. Thanks.